This is On the Mark. Thank you for checking out the podcast. We are talking baseball on this episode with Paul Sullivan, who has covered the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox for a long, long time. Sully, a Hall of Fame writer with a Hall of Fame vote. We will get into who he thinks should be in the Hall of Fame. What does he think about the PED users? That's all coming up. But let's start with Sully and where he started in his career. How long have you been doing this work, Paul Sullivan?
Off and on since 87, and then full-time since 94.
Okay, now no one's listening to this, so don't be afraid, but you grew up more of a Sox or a Cubs? I think Sox, correct?
I grew up in a Sox household, and I did only go to Comiskey Park for the first 10 years of my life, and then one day in 1969, I happened to come here with a buddy of mine, since my dad would not take me to games, and at least games up here. And then I saw Wrigley Field, and that was it for me.
So did you become a fan of both, or did you?
Yeah, I like both teams. But as you know, as a kid, the Cubs were good in the late 60s, early 70s. And the Sox, until 72 when they got Dick Allen, it was kind of, you know, hit and miss down there. But I love Dick Allen. He's one of my favorite players, and Billy Williams. So, you know, I went to both parks. I love both places.
One of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you, and I feel I relate, is that you seem to be wanting to hold on to the old tradition. Like, Wrigley's going through a whole transformation, getting more and more corporate. And you've been writing about this. It's kind of like a chip away at the childhood or something.
Well, it is ironic that they're more corporate now that they're owned by a family than they were when they were owned by a corporation. But I do feel that. And I'm not against all the changes. I think a lot of the stuff they've done is very good and adds to the, you know, probably the longevity of Wrigley Field, things that they had to do. I just don't really think it was necessary to move the bullpens underneath the bleachers. That was, to me, one of the cool things of Wrigley, watching the pitchers warm up, and I still miss that. The plaza outside is fine. You know, I don't have any problem with them making money off that or anything. The video board, I do like to watch the videos. I don't like all the jingles with Clark and whatever, but I think that's been is blended in as well as it could be. So the noise, I do think the noise is too loud here. But that's, a lot of people say that you're just old and cranky, and so I'll chalk that up to that.
Well, and we're getting a little bit of the music right now, so I hope that you are enjoying this as we move through our interview. Biggest change in the game that you've seen over the years that, obviously, like with Wrigley, it probably is like just going back, like lights came in and all that stuff, but I'm talking about like on the field, and there's this whole push to speed up the game, and then we, of course, had the whole performance-enhancing era as well. I mean, what would you say, like, if so, you know, just as far as like changes to the game that are noticeable to you?
Well, obviously, since the end of since the start of drug testing, it's totally changed the scores of the games. I mean, they're back in the, when I was covering the Cubs within the Sammy era, that was like, you know, 10-9 games a lot of the times, and now. You still get a few of those, but the pitchers are so dominant now. And I never really thought it would go back to pitching being dominant. I thought it would always be high scoring the rest of our lives. And that just shows how skewed the game was during the steroid era. And now, I mean, obviously there's just so many strikeouts. It's you just get inured to it that, you know, a guy's going to strike out in a big situation. You just almost expect it now. And no one seems to care that they're striking out, you know, 150, 200 times a year. And they just say, well, it's, you know, great pitching now. And obviously it is better pitching, but I think it's also worse hitting.
So, okay, people want offense. Yeah. The game wants to be sped up. Like, my solution to the whole speeding up thing is, well, make the strike zone what the strike zone should be, the letters to the knees. But then you're going to get more what you're just talking about, strikeouts. So if Paul Sullivan is trying to get baseball both quicker or more moving, I guess they want better pace, plus, you know, more offense, what you're talking about, you got anything?
I'm not trying to make it more quick, you know, to make a move quicker. If you really wanted to make the game move quicker, you know, you shorten the commercial times, which they're never going to do. Stop all the mound visits by the catcher. I mean, my gosh, Wilson Contreras is, he could have a flight to L.A. by now, all the times he's been to the mound. And I'm not picking on him. Other catchers do it too. But, you know, guys come in from the bullpen and throw like 10 pitches. Well, hell, you just threw 40 pitches in the bullpen. You should be ready. Just come out here and pitch. Just stuff like that. Guys in the batter's box, obviously. Now I'm getting worked up. Sorry. You know, twisting the Nomar thing with the, you know, the batting gloves. My God, I mean, you really have to do that every single pitch? So there are things they could do to speed up the game. I think that's just all a ruse by baseball. It's going to be a complaint that goes on forever. Baseball's fine. Just do the stupid little things like that, and you'll fix it quickly.
Yeah, no, with the batting gloves and whatnot, my thing, once your at-bat starts, you're in the box, man. Right.
Maybe if you hit a foul ball, you can step out. But if you make contact somehow. But, yeah, really, stay in the box. And pitchers, throw the ball. I mean, come on. What's the problem? Get the sign, throw the ball.
Do you have a Hall of Fame vote?
I do, yes.
What's your thoughts on the performance-enhancing guys?
Well, I'm kind of a dying breed here, just kind of like I'm a traditionalist with the Wrigley and the baseball, is that I don't vote for guys that I am fairly sure did steroids. And obviously you don't know anymore because a lot of guys didn't get caught. But I'm better safe than better. I feel if they get in, fine, but I didn't contribute to them getting in. And if it comes out years from now that they admit they did steroids, my thinking is, well, hey, you already got the money for it and you got the fame, so you don't really need to get into the Hall of Fame.
So maybe I was naive. And when Sammy was doing 98, I got to date myself here, I was 25 years old. I had no idea. He said he was taking Flintstone vitamins. I believed him. Did you know at the time what was going on?
Well, I wouldn't say Flintstones, but we knew he was doing a supplement. Everyone was doing some kind of supplements. I mean, they would do it right in front of us. They would make a creatine shake. And it's just that, you know, what's the difference between the supplements and the steroids? I mean, they're working out all the time. So there was no way to prove it. That's my thing is you're not with these guys. You have no idea. You think they're doing it, and obviously I was pretty sure that something was going on, but you know, people blaming the media say, wow, you never wrote about it. Well, you want us to just like come out and just, you know, point fingers at everyone without any proof? We couldn't do that.
Yeah, and I don't mean to just single out Sammy. I mean, I remember standing, and I don't have any proof on Sammy, or Mark McGwire, who I stood next to at the time, and his shoulders to me were like bigger than anything I'd ever seen, and he was hitting bombs way down the street here, which just was not human.
Jeff Bagwell was huge, and then he came out of the game, and I saw him the next year. He was at a game in Houston. I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't recognize him. So, you know, obviously there's going to be some thinking that guys run steroids if they were huge, and then all of a sudden they're skinny, which happens a lot. So it's, you know, it's really a conundrum, and I understand people that are saying, hey, they're just tired of it, and more people are voting for guys. Even guys that are obviously guilty, like Bonds and Clemens, you know, they're getting more votes now, and they'll probably eventually get in. So I'm just going to keep my stance, and, you know, I'll just go down with the ship, I guess.
I'm with you. I'm on that ship. No, don't put them in. So
you have to admit they are going to all get in.
I think so. Yeah, that's how it's trending.
Maybe not Sammy or Palmeiro or those guys, but
well, okay. Then I have the, okay. Let's talk about that for a second. If you're Sammy's numbers are 100% Hall of Fame numbers. If you're putting the other ones, why is Sammy so down the list?
That is baffling to me. The only thing I could think of is that. You know, he also had the corked bat thing, and he also had the I don't speak English when testifying in front of Congress. And I think people just thought maybe that he was just not very trustful in anything, and that also that with Clemens and Bonds, you know, they probably would have made the Hall of Fame if they'd never done anything because they were on their way. Whereas Sammy is kind of a creation that created a Hall of Fame career with the PEDs, allegedly.
Right. Good job getting that in there, Sully. All right. So here, let's talk about your experience and just, I don't know if people care about this. I do. I think fans do. The experience of covering guys nowadays where, you know, in the past, you'd walk into the clubhouse and, you know, going back to that same era, Mark Grace, whoever you wanted to pick out, they're having a beer after the game. They're smoking cigarettes. Right. And you would never see that now.
No. I don't even know how many guys smoke anymore. Very few, I would say, which is good, I think. But, yeah, you used to see him drinking in the clubhouse. That old 98 Cubs team, I mean, that was like a smoker's lounge in there. We were always afraid of getting secondhand smoke. You know, Gracie and Beck and I think Blauser.
Matt Karchner.
Yeah, Morandini, all those guys. Yeah, it was a party team, and they had a good time. I didn't mind back then. I still don't mind. You do whatever you want.
Do you think your relationship level with the players is equal nowadays as it was then? I mean, you were, I guess, more beat guy then, and you're more special now, but you are special, Sully. But, I mean, what would you say about that?
Special, yeah. Well, yeah, it's different not being the beat guy because you're not around him. If you're the beat guy, you're around him every single day. And now I'm a columnist. I'm just mostly around him home games and a few road trips. So there's still some players I have a good relationship with, but certainly not the whole team. But on the flip side, I don't argue with players like I used to. I used to really have some drag-out arguments with players that I'd have to criticize, including Sammy, Frank Thomas, Mark Pryor, Milton Bradley. I mean, I could go on. And that was a good part of the job because it really keeps you on your toes and makes you realize that, you know, they are reading you and they don't like... Yeah, man, I'm not writing for them. I'm writing for my readers. And you have, in a place like Chicago, you have to be pretty honest because, you know, this is not a sugarcoat kind of town.
Can you share any one of the player disagreements? Are you free to do that? Do we have to have the tell-all book?
I guess the Frank one would be, because Frank and I get along great, especially after he retired. Frank always said, I think he told Kerry Wood this, that Sully's a lot better guy once you're retired than when he's writing about you. But he was always getting in some kind of trouble with reporting late or upset about his salary or something. And at one point during the season, he confided in me that he was upset with the way he was being treated. He wanted to be traded. And I said, oh, well, where would you like to be traded to? And he goes, anywhere but Alaska. I said, oh, okay, that's a good quote. And this was a day game, so I went up and wrote it and obviously put it on the internet or whatever. And this is before Twitter and all that. Social media, but it was out. And then after the game, he decided that he didn't want that quote in there. I was like, oh, hey, it's too late. It's already up. Well, take it down. I said, no, you said it. And, you know, I left it up. And so it wasn't until I think the next day he really hit him. It was in the paper and big headline, you know, Frank, trade me, says Frank Thomas. And he was like, that's strike two, Sully. That's strike two. And I'm like, strike two? What happened to strike one? You know what strike one was. And one more strike. And I'm like, come on, Frank. You know, you know you said it. I know I said it, but I asked you not to put it in, and which he did. So I don't know. That was kind of we got over it. But I guess that was kind of tame in some of the Milton Bradley stuff. But... you know, as a beat writer, you go through stuff like that, and hopefully the players understand that it's not your job to kiss their butts.
Well, that's the balancing act, right? Because you want them to quote unquote like you, so they'll talk to you. But then you got to do your job.
Yeah, and it's a lot different. You know, there's some people here, and I don't want to get into it, but they're just radio guys, and they. You know, every question is how great are you? Hey, how great are you today? And you know, they need to get them on the radio for shows and stuff. And that's not my thing. And I'm writing what the fans want to read about you. And hopefully we have the kind of relationship where you understand that. Most players, I would say, in my career have. The ones that usually don't are the people, like, in the front offices don't usually have the same kind of understanding. And I've also gotten into it with, you know, them. And probably more so than the players, now that I think of it. But, you know, it's... You get on people's nerves if you write the truth, and hopefully I write the truth.
What would you say if a random fan comes up, whatever, not somebody that you would talk to, like me right now, Sully, what do you think of Theo Epstein and how he goes about his business and how he handles his talks to you and the media and everything he's done here?
He's great. I think Theo's very good. He's accommodating. You know, I think when he started out here, you'd have to ask him, but I think he was very wary of the media. He was misinformed about a lot of us, including me, and he really was took a different approach. And it wasn't until he really got to know us, and especially me, that I think he kind of warmed up. And because, you know, those were some pretty bad teams for a couple years, and it was tough for him to relate the plan when what you're seeing on the field is just garbage. I think I understood what he was saying, and he articulated it well. And I think he's very good. It's different now, though. I mean, I don't really call Theo up. Back in the day, I would Ron Shuler, Jim Hendry, Larry Himes. You always call up the GM. You'd spend half your winter on the phone with the GMs, and it's different now. You know, it's usually you text them or email them or whatever, so I don't have as much communication with Theo as I did with the old GMs.
I remember you being on the field with Jim Hendry all the time, having lengthy discussions that I always wanted to know what was going on. What are you talking to Jim about, Sully?
Yeah, and he was one of the guys that understood my job. We did have some drag-out fights, and he'd be the first one to tell you that, and I'm sure there was some that I was wrong and some that he was wrong. I think nowadays they're with Twitter and Facebook and everything, that's everything's out there. I mean, everything is out there, so they're a lot more cautious. I think managers especially are a lot more boring because they're very cautious of what they say, and no one wants to be construed as saying anything negative about a player ever. I mean, God forbid they, you know, get upset that, oh, the manager said I wasn't coming through in the clutch. But Joe, at least, is pretty refreshing. He's not going to rip players, but he's at least pretty open. But I see more and more managers just giving the same old stuff, and I think it hurts the game.
So, last two here. If you could play, I don't know, progressive God here, you can have Twitter, Facebook, and all of it, or not have it. Your choice?
For me or for them?
Oh, just you as doing the job and everything.
Oh, I love it. I think it's great. You can... Well, I don't do it as much now that I'm a columnist, but when I was a beat writer, you could really get some... you know, some comments out there that you probably couldn't get the paper, and that probably got me in a lot more trouble than it was worth, but you know, it was fun. I'm kind of a smart ass, so I like whipping off a one-liner every once in a while, and linking your stories. I think it's good marketing for the newspaper and for the writers themselves, because I hate to say it, but we're kind of brands now. If you've been doing it long enough, not just me, but like a Bruce Miles is a brand, and Kaplan definitely is. Dave Kaplan definitely a brand. Some of us work on it more than others, but it's probably good overall. I just think it makes the players and the general managers more boring and harder to get them to really say the truth.
And last one. Are the Cubs more or less interesting now that they've won it? Because that story was exhausting, but it was a story that had a lot of legs.
Yeah, it is less interesting. I've been grappling with this in spring training, to be honest with you, that, you know, if you've been writing the same Cubs story for like 30 years, and now it's it's you're dealing with, well, the Cubs are champions. And although I have to say this whole ring thing and the memorabilia thing, it's kind of added to the interest because now you're seeing the Cubs dealing with and having some missteps over their success. Not the players. Well, even the players, you know, struggling in the first couple weeks with 500 record. But it's not as... No, they've lost something now that they've won it. And it's really, it's more of a challenge to the writers to, you know, keep our interest up when, you know, you've been waiting for something to happen for 30 years. It happens, you know, what's next?
Sully, I think it's, I still can't believe it from my fancy that they won it.
Yes.
But I also, but there was... like when they were about to win it in 03, and I remember, you know, I was a vendor back then, and a media guy kept the vending on the download so people didn't know. I remember leaving the right field commissary, walking all the way to left field right before Bartman happened, and it just felt weird to me that these guys are about to do this. But last year, I just like felt like, okay, it's actually time. I do think it's a little bit
even
less interesting.
When Chapman gave up the home run, you felt that?
Oh, no, I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I really thought like I wasn't going to be able to handle it if they lost.
And imagine if they had lost that game, how different it would be right now. I mean, there would be like, oh, they would still be talking about the GOAT and the Bartman and blah, blah, blah.
And it honestly, it would affect my mood right now.
Yes, thank God. We don't have to. I'm happy the Cubs won, but I do admit it is less interesting to me. But well, still interesting.
But still interesting. It's okay
it's
that
less interesting.
It's okay that it's less interesting. Hey, just so you know, this is the first. And I think I told you this before, but this is the first non-athlete that I've interviewed for the podcast. And you know, when I started in the business, you were out here, so that's it's like almost like a it's just a treat for me to be sitting with you today.
Well, it's a treat to do it. I'm glad I did it, and I hope you get more writers on because, you know, there's a lot of interesting writers in Chicago. I do have to say that of all the media corps, this is the most interesting because there's a lot of characters, and we like to keep up the tradition of Chicago characters, the Jerome Holtzman, Bob Verdi, all those guys from the past, Ring Lardner. I mean, we have a great tradition of pretty nonconformist sports writing, and hopefully we uphold that tradition.
You're absolutely doing that. You are, Sully.
I know I am.
Thanks for taking time.
Thanks, Carl.
The great Paul Sullivan taking time before a Cubs game at Wrigley Field. Great to talk with Sully, and great to talk some baseball as well. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for checking out On the Mark. I'm Mark Carmen.